Our next speaker is Kelton Barr of Kelton Barr Consulting. Kelton is familiar to many of you. He's twice a past president of this organization. Kelton has a BA in geology from Carleton College and an MS in hydrogeology from the University of Minnesota. Kelton, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Ellen. Well, already there's been several speakers that have gone through where we've come from. And there's a few highlights on this slide that I'll just kind of go through quickly. The 1970s, as Gretchen mentioned, 1960 there was Silent Spring, which kind of started a lot of the environmental movement. Late 60s, the MPCA was founded. The 70s was basically a building decade. We had landfills coming into being, replacing dumps. The PCA started its first hazardous waste investigation of Riley Tar and Chemical. That's a picture of one of the wells at Riley Tar and Chemical pumping a dilute creosote mixture. It's percent creosote. Probably wouldn't let it fall on the ground like it is there these days. It was one of our first Superfund sites that would come into being later. The Minnesota Groundwater Association, the Health Department started its well code. And so we finally started to have proper construction, we can say now, of wells and reporting of their logs. Until that point, I remember going to the USGS, and their entire well inventory was in a stack this high of index cards. We've come a long way. We now have tens of thousands of wells at our fingertips. And the water priority law came into being, so we were able to put drinking water over agricultural uses, over industrial. The 80s was kind of a ramp-up decade. The boom years where Superfund, both state and federal, were passed. The Minnesota Groundwater Association was founded. And the first county atlas was produced by the Minnesota Geological Survey. And then from the 90s on, we've had kind of modulations. Things have come and gone, waxed and waned. Budgets, policies, administrations, viewpoints. And so we've ended up we've ended up improving our technologies, some of our analytical tools, and we've certainly been building up data. And it's now our challenge of being able to effectively use the data, especially using GIS. And through that period of time, we've hopefully learned a few fundamental lessons that I'm going to put forward here. And you're going to say, well, yeah, these are pretty basic, but we bumped our heads in a lot of, spent a lot of money to have these be lessons learned. Once contamination is in the groundwater, it's going to take a long, long time to remove it. And contamination plumes move toward discharge points and discharge areas, our surface waters and our wells. Treating groundwater to potable standards is very, very expensive. And it's only by monitoring that we're able to identify where the problems are and how to fix them. I'm going to turn to these a little bit later. So these are lessons that we've learned. Let's look toward the future now. Let me give you an example. The prediction is right now that by 2040, there'll be 1 million more people in the Twin Cities metro area. I think Gretchen said it took a couple decades for the state to add another 1 million people back in the 60s, 70s. So this is a lot of people. And at this point, most of our groundwater is, most of our drinking water is coming from groundwater. And as we know, thanks to the studies around White Bear Lake now, if you do a lot of pumping, you can start to affect surface waters. So there's going to be inherent limitations to how much pumping we can do. And plus, there's going to be issues of groundwater depletion in various areas. And there are places in the metro area where there just are not bedrock aquifers. So one of the things that we've been looking at is, can we enhance the recharge to groundwater supplies for the Twin Cities drinking water. It's basically trying to increase the pie so that more people can be using it. And of course, we have a basin structure in this area. We have several different Paleozoic aquifers in sandstones and carbonates that are basically recharged through various tills and outwash deposits that pretty much blanket the entire metro area, up to 300 feet thick. And of course, we have places like on the left side where there's really no bedrock aquifers. You have to look within the drift itself. So this was a study that was looking to identify areas that could be potentially suitable for regional scale enhanced recharge of aquifers. And we were using existing data sets, public databases, and using GIS to correlate this information, and looking at hydrogeologic parameters, but then a few other things. Whoops. And I want to acknowledge at this point the team at HDR that I worked with, Cabby Jones and Adam Kessler, and Ali El Hassan at the Metro Council that sponsored this. So we had these parameters here. Can we have suitable infiltration rates at the surface so we can be getting water in the ground? Hydraulic connectivities that would be suitable to get water through the overburden. A deep enough water table so we could build up mounds to do regional scale recharge. And having an uppermost bedrock that's an aquifer and conducive to accepting the water. And we took this information and put it into three tiers. First tier would be good values that would be effective recharge. A middle tier that in Minnesota we'd say not bad, not quite as good, but still workable. And then a third tier where not good enough. Kind of going quickly here so we can get to other things. And so quickly going through the maps of these areas, these things. The first 5 feet, the infiltration rates. Most of the metro area has either good or not bad or okay values. And if we look at the hydraulic connectivity for the first 60 feet of overburden, the eastern part of the metro area have good to okay values. And looking at the entire overburden thickness, well, now we're basically finding good values that are in the southeastern part of the metro area. Depth to water, most of the southern majority of the metro area have decent values for that. So just taking those hydrogeologic criteria and overlaying them, we end up with a similar kind of categories. Tier 1 areas, which would have all Tier 1 values. Tier 2 areas, which would have one or more Tier 2 values. And Tier 3, the leftovers. So first looking at all the aquifers, drift and bedrock, we can see that they're good to acceptable values can be found in two-thirds of the metro area and along the Minnesota River. But if we're looking at just bedrock, well, that's actually turns out to be confined mostly to the eastern part of the metro area and the southeastern part, with a little bit along the Minnesota River. Adding a few other values, other criteria like land use, that would be compatible to have a 5 to 10 acre infiltration basin. Natural resource areas from federal and state programs, identifying sensitive and protected areas, threatened and endangered species, and so forth. Wellhead protection. Where are the duismas and shallow depths to Père de Chien, health department criteria? And then the location of contamination sites and plumes. Certainly you don't want to be infiltrating water there. So again, looking at taking all these criteria and looking at drift and bedrock aquifers, we see that, well, okay, there's a northwestern fringe that has a number of acceptable areas. And again, along the Minnesota River and in the southwest, and a lot of areas along the eastern side of the metro area, Washington County and Dakota County. But if we look at just bedrock, we're pretty much limited to the eastern part of Washington County and eastern Dakota County. And so, you know, if one is extrapolating into the future and looking at where can we actually do effective recharge without direct injection, Dakota County is kind of the Saudi Arabia of recharge locations. So let's now look at that area with the help of some good old movies made by Bill Olson. He's going to rock your world for a second time today. This is a map of nitrate values. He's taken nitrate, all the nitrate groundwater analyses, and looked at them through time and depth, and also doing some statistical responsible treatment of the data. So let's see if we can get this to run. So they go from 1980 to 2016, and the blue shades are 10 parts per million or less, and the yellows to reds are the higher concentrations. And you can see that there are areas within 25 feet below the water table that, especially in eastern Dakota County, are having unacceptable high nitrate values. And these are the medians. Let's look 100 feet below the water table. So we're down in the lower overburden at this point. They're blessed with a lot of outwash there. And again, we see concentrations drifting up to 10, above 10, again in eastern Dakota County. And he even has one for 200 feet below. Now, it starts off fairly clean, but even at 200 feet, which is now we're in the upper bedrock, per Deschene. And we're already seeing values creeping up to the limit, 10 part per million limit, and in some places it actually breaks through to above that. Let's look at a few cross sections. This one is east to west across the northern part of Dakota County. So the upper part is the vertical cross section, and can see the growth of high nitrate levels that with time work their way downward as groundwater is pulled downward. If you haven't guessed by now, eastern Dakota County, if you don't already know, has a lot of center pivot irrigation going on right now. Pumping out of the Prairie Deschene, adding water to the top, adding in some fertilizers, some pesticides, irrigating, and excesses moving on down. At least that's what it seems to be. This is, already did this one, sorry. Here's a diagonal off to the southeast going through eastern Dakota County. So this is kind of through the heart of what would be the good recharge area. And again, we see development of deeper and deeper penetration of detectable and higher, increasingly higher concentrations of nitrate. Now the bottom of this figure is 300 feet below land surface. So we're well into the bedrock aquifer at that point. So so we're seeing that there's kind of a conflict there. And this is something that, as our last speakers were saying, we have a windshield. We need to look out it and look at what the future is. We've learned some lessons already. Can we be applying it to our future needs? Certainly, at the minimum, these areas are likely to be having the agriculture displaced by subdivisions. And as they move in and put in their community water supplies, they're going to find it's contaminated. We have a long time to pump it out, and it's going to be very expensive to treat it and drink it. So it's kind of, if anything, it's kind of an admonition for all of us as we go through our careers in groundwater to be good stewards and make sure that we're living up to the passing on a better situation for the future generations. That's pretty much the end. I have here a website link. This is where the report on the enhanced recharge study can be found on the Metro Council website. Actually, it's still being put up there, but it'll be in that neighborhood in the very near future. Well, thank you very much.
Kelton, so with you brought in the nitrate concentrations in the area where you're, what would you say, recommending a recharge basin, so to speak, is that, do you see added benefits of that recharge in terms of decreasing over time the concentration of nitrates in the groundwater?
Only when they stop adding nitrates. With time, once it's supplanted, yes, then they will start to have a long century or two of diluting, denitrifying, all of the processes that can slowly remove or attenuate the nitrate. But that's a long time. It'll be a long time. Even though nitrate is a fairly mobile compound, that's just the way aquifers cleanse themselves. It takes a while.
Thanks, Kelton. I'm skeptical that doing anything with recharge is going to really help us work our way out of the next 20 or 30 years, the challenges, especially, I think, like we've talked about, you know, a lot of the recharge areas that are prospective are close to the rivers anyways. I just don't think we're, I mean, every little bit helps, but my question is, do you really think that doing anything with recharge in the metro is going to help? Or do we have a bigger place that we can attack this problem from sustainability? Like just finding more efficient ways to use our water, growing without growing water use.
I think, as you know, Paul, we're going to have to use every solution we have, all the tools that we have that we can. More efficient use of water, gray water use, but one of the things can be recharge. And right now, we have a parallel program going on with rain gardens and infiltration basins anyways. This is extrapolation of that, taking care of runoff that we're right now trying to not send off to the river through storm sewers, and have beneficial use. And so the whole process of looking at these infiltration basins will mean that what is the water quality going into them? And that's another issue. But we're going to be looking at all sorts of water quality issues to work out these solutions. And yeah, I'm glad you're at the DNR and can be managing these problems for us, Paul.
Hey, Kelton, we have a question that digs a little bit deeper in that on the pigeonhole. If you could encourage local government units to do one thing for water conservation, what would it be?
Repeat it again.
If you could encourage local government units to do one thing for water conservation, what would it be? The one thing.
For water conservation. I guess I would be encouraging them to start planning on gray water usage, gray water piping systems, having a reuse of water and having clean water going for potable usage as much as we can, and gray water and such used for compatible purposes. That's going to be the things that they need to be building into their infrastructure programs. And they're the ones that are going to have to do that. And that's going to have probably the most water-conserving impact that we can have. But that's from my perspective.
Thanks, Kelton. This is Brian Stenquist from the DNR.
Yes,
thanks for the strategic perspective on Dakota County. Given if your prediction is true that, in fact, excuse me, residential development will eventually supersede the agricultural activities in the eastern part of Dakota County, what kind of innovations are unfolding for decontaminating that water, which will become the water supply for those future communities? Anything on the horizon for more effective reverse osmosis?
You're presuming I'm an engineer, which I am not. And so I really can't answer that question. But we're probably going to be looking at things that right now are considered exotic and expensive. How are we going to be dealing with chlorides? It's something that, regardless of whether we use that water for potable purposes or not, we still are slowly salinating our aquifers and our lakes. So we need to be somehow dealing with that as well. So there's a number of things that are probably going to be what are considered exotic and expensive now that we're going to have to be embracing for our Minnesota way of life, winter and summer.
I've got one over here, Kelton.
Okay.
So I'd like to think that Southern Dakota County is not going to develop. There currently is an agricultural preserve program that makes tax incentives for people to keep their land in farmland. And I would like to think that we can additionally incentivize them to farm a different way so that they're recharging with clean water. But if you were to put an enhanced recharge project on any of that land there, what would it be?
Well, first, I would love to see a program where those deep bedrock wells that are being used for irrigation water supplies are replaced by shallow wells so that you have more shallow recirculation of water. That can help start to prevent the introduction deeper of the fertilizers and pesticides. And that then can give some hope with modeling and additional investigation. Probably can find those spots here and there among the agricultural preserve that still can be used for recharge. I think it's going to take something like that, though, to have it work. Thanks for letting me think big with you.